C+43. En route, destination unknown. An unknowable amount of time after losing consciousness at the drive-in, Dan McCarthy awoke with a pounding headache. With no real points of reference for this kind of feeling, all he could liken the sensation to was that of a murderous hangover. He looked down and saw that he was positioned on a plastic stretcher with a thin pillow under his head. What the hell? Several medical sensors were stuck to his skin, hooked up to a screen full of readings, and he was definitely moving in some kind of ground-based vehicle. Despite these typically telltale signs, however, it certainly didn't look or feel like any ambulance he'd ever seen. Seriously? What the hell? Fortunately, Dan's acute panic dissipated when he turned around and saw Clark in the dim light, sitting on the bare floor next to the stretcher.
"It's okay, man," Clark said gently. "Just relax."
Dan carefully pushed himself up to a sitting position and asked the obvious question.
"Where are we going?"
"They wouldn't tell me," Clark replied.
"Who wouldn't tell you? Who's driving this thing, GSC guys?"
"It's just the feds," Clark said, far more calmly than Dan could understand. "They closed off the whole drive-in, gave you some sedatives, and did a lot of pathogen tests at the scene. Now they need to question us at this facility we're going to. But listen, man, right now you really need to relax. You've been through a lot, but everything's okay."
"Okay?" Dan echoed. "Okay? What exactly is okay about being sedated and locked in the back of a van without even knowing where it's taking us?"
"Dan, I already talked them into letting me stay with you at all times. I asked if they wanted a mob of thousands of angry people outside every federal building in the country, because that's what they would have gotten if I'd had to post something about you being taken away and held against your will. But listen to me. Sure, these really aren't the kind of people we can say no to, but the fact that they let me stay with you at least tells us that they're not our enemies. I'll be with you the whole time, and they said it's just a few more physical tests and then some questions."
After glancing again at the readings on the screen next to his stretcher, Dan's gaze suddenly shot towards Clark as his mind cleared.
"How's Emma?" he blurted out, patting his pocket for a phone that had long ago been confiscated. "When did you last speak to Tara?"
"Yeah, they took everything," Clark said, watching Dan looking around for his phone. "But they let me call Tara before we left. Emma was awake, she's going to be okay, and she saw what happened at the drive-in. Can you remember any of that? Can you remember exactly what they told you?"
Dan was silent for several seconds. The news about Emma was music to his ears, and he could remember everything perfectly. Of course he could. But he knew that his every word was doubtless being listened to and recorded by whoever was driving the vehicle. With this in mind, he didn't want to say too much until he knew what was going on and where he was being taken.
"I'm really tired," he eventually said. "We'll talk about it later."
With these words, the vehicle drew to a gentle halt. Surely, they both thought, this was no coincidence. To confirm this suspicion, a man entered the rear section of the vehicle via a small and previously concealed doorway-like hatch connected to the front. The agent, who looked to be in his late 40s or early 50s, had reddish-blonde hair, freckles, and features far less harsh than Dan would have expected.
"Mr. McCarthy," he said before looking between the brothers and realizing that this wasn't much of a qualifier.
Dan?
"What?" Dan said, instinctively disconnecting the adhesive sensors from his skin and moving from the stretcher to the security of the spot beside Clark.
"Can you contact them again?"
the man asked, a surprising straightforwardness that bordered on innocence in his voice. Dan chose his words very carefully.
"If they wanted to talk to you, they wouldn't go through me."
"Well, we would very much like to talk to them."
"It takes two to tango," Dan said.
"I'm sure it does," the agent said, giving little away in his expression.
"For now, Dan, if you don't mind, I'd very much like to ask you some questions about what happened earlier today."
Dan shook his head.
"Me first. You answer my questions, and maybe I'll think about answering yours."
The agent held out an upturned palm to invite Dan's questions.
"Although," he said, "I can make no promises that I'll be able to answer them."
"Where are we going?"
Dan asked, wasting no time.
"Unfortunately, I'm not able to."
"What's your job title?"
The agent took a deep breath. Again, who do you report to? This time, the only reply Dan got came in the form of a weak sigh.
You're not very good at this, Dan said.
The agent raised his eyebrows and wrinkled his nose in a nervous tick kind of way.
Dan, it will save a lot of time for everyone if you cooperate by answering some questions now so that the physical tests can begin as soon as we arrive.
What physical tests? I haven't agreed to anything.
I can assure you it's nothing invasive, but we have several hours until we arrive, so I want a phone call, Dan said, his demeanor changing instantly.
If I'm going to be in this vehicle for hours, I want a phone call now. And you can tell whoever is driving that I'm not cooperating with anyone or anything until I get it.
The agent looked at Clark, hoping to find some reason.
You heard him, Clark said firmly. One phone call.
Look, if I could give you that, I would. But it's just not possible.
Fine, Dan shrugged.
If that's how you want to play it.
It's not really my decision. If you would just be willing to...
Like I said, Dan spoke over him. Fine. It's you who has to go back to your boss and tell him you failed.
The agent, looking defeated, sulked back through to the front of the vehicle. He hadn't struck Dan as typical of the kind of person he would have expected, and he couldn't help but wonder whether they'd deliberately sent someone so non-threatening to ask the questions and whether their next attempts might not be so gentle. Equally aware of the certainty that their conversations were being recorded, Clark winked at Dan. He was pleased, and more than a little proud of him for holding his ground and showing that he wouldn't be pushed around. While he wanted Dan to cooperate, it was important to have a backbone and show that they wouldn't back down from any plainly stated and reasonable demands. A long, boring drive continued in near silence for almost an hour. Neither brother wanted to say too much until the vehicle drew to another gentle and unexpectedly early halt. Dan's initial assumption that they had arrived proved to be premature when the same non-threatening agent returned through the same doorway-like hatch with a phone in his hand. He gave it to Dan.
One call, he said, trying to sound more intimidating than he was, and make it quick.
Dan grinned. Don't gloat, Clark whispered. Say thanks.
Thanks, Dan said, taking the unfamiliar phone and immediately dialing Tara's number. He had always been effortlessly good at internalizing numbers. This rarely came in handy, but when it did, it did.
Pick up, pick up, pick up,
he pleaded, desperately hoping that Tara would be willing to answer a call from an unknown number. He was even more desperate to confirm that Emma was still awake and okay, and as soon as the ringing stopped, he got a positive answer to both concerns. Emma's voice answered, full of hope despite the unknown number the call was coming in from.
Dan?
Yeah, he said, smiling broadly. Are you okay?
Oh my God, are you? I saw everything.
I'm fine, Dan insisted, but what about you?
Been better, but they say everything is going to get better, so it could be a lot worse. Seriously, though, how are you doing? Where did they take you?
We're still on the way, and I still don't know where to, Dan said. The back of whatever kind of vehicle we're in doesn't have any windows, and they won't tell me anything. They finally gave me a phone call, but only because I said I wouldn't talk to them until they did.
Just cooperate, okay? They're not going to hurt you. Please just do what you have to do to get home.
Dan hesitated.
Dan, promise me you'll get home as soon as you can.
Emma said, the insistent timbre making her sound something more like her normal self.
Okay, I promise. And I'll tell you everything the messenger said when I get home. But the main thing is that Il Diavolo shouldn't be a problem anymore. They said that because their initial intervention set us back so far...
You haven't heard?
Emma butted in, genuine surprise in her voice.
Natalia Ricci from Fiori Frontieri reported it first, and Godfrey has confirmed it. The comet's course has changed. It's going to miss us. Dan, whatever you told them, it worked. You did it.
Dan looked at Clark, who was close enough to hear every word of the phone conversation. Clark wore a joyous expression, perfectly befitting a man who had just learned that his life, along with every other on Earth, had been spared. Dan, having taken the messengers at their word that they would ensure the comet didn't hit, was less emotional but no less relieved.
I think the credit for that has to go to them, he said.
Don't you sell yourself short, Dan McCarthy,
Emma replied, warming his heart with the chirpy tone of old.
Don't you ever sell yourself short.
Clark briefly glanced at the agent, sensed the man's impatience, and tapped his own wrist to pass the silent message to Dan.
I have to go, Dan told Emma.
Okay, I'll see you soon, she said. And Dan?
Yeah?
I love you.
Momentarily, Dan felt frozen once again, an altogether different kind of frozen than during his experience in the drive-in, but frozen nonetheless.
I love you too, he eventually said.
The message is on point, but I think we could work on the timing and delivery,
Emma replied, putting on her best work voice. Dan couldn't help but laugh.
I'll be there as soon as I can, he said, ending the call. The agent cleared his throat.
So?
Okay, Dan said, turning to face him.
I'm ready for your questions.